KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland Chinatown's 5th Annual Lunar New Year Dragon Dance Parade on Saturday, January 25th from 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. The New Year Dragon Dance Parade to celebrate the Year of the Rat begins at Northwest 3rd and Davis at 11:30 a.m. and ends at the Oregon Historical Society. Live afternoon performances and activities will begin at 1:30 p.m. Again, that's Portland Chinatown's 5th Annual Lunar New Year Dragon Dance Parade on Saturday, January 25th from 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. The parade begins at Northwest 3rd and Davis at 11:30 a.m. and the activities and performances begin at 1:30 p.m. at the Oregon Historical Society, 1200 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. Information about the parade route, performers, and sponsors can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors will meet Tuesday, January 28th at 6 p.m. instead of Monday for their January board meeting.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
You ready for really big fun?
What are you talking about?
All horrible things.
It's a normal day.
All normal, right? Horrible things. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. And we'd like to hear from you at 231-8187. But I got a bunch of stuff I just want to throw out.
Yeah, there's a lot. A lot.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. There's a lot. It turns out that 737, you know, the one that's no good.
The plane?
The plane, the Boeing plane. Uh-huh. Turns out it was no good 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it crashed and they hid it. They hid the crashing of it way back then.
That's
and that
good.
Was before the adding of the big engines and the new wings.
Oh.
So, Boeing, oh, boy.
I also heard that they're they're going to rename the plane. So
really?
The people won't be scared.
Oh, what are they going to call it? What are they
gonna call really it? Don't know. I don't know what
no are. Crash. Call it the no crash. Okay, so you know
the Boeing cotton ball.
Yeah. So there's Davos. I really missed Trump's speech. I don't know if it was broadcast.
Okay.
And
you're not giving context. You're just saying these things. You said 737 in Davos. So
that's what I'm doing. I'm giving a decontexted presentation of various topics.
Just free floating.
Not telling people what we're really going to talk about.
You're in the Trumpian,
too late.
Trumpian mode.
That's not a Trumpian mode. That's a random thought of the brilliant you and me mode, said he. And here's the thing that I'm actually quite worried about. The progressive wing of the Democratic Party seems to be at its own throat. And Biden is being attacked by Bernie, and Bernie and Elizabeth are fighting. And all of this has no possible use in terms of defeating Trump.
I don't care about any of this.
You don't care about any of it?
No.
Why not?
Why should I care that the Democratic candidates are scrapping with each other?
Well, because somehow there has to be getting rid of Trump in the wings of all of this.
I really doubt that they've lost sight of that.
You think they're really on top of it?
I think that remains their goal. Yeah. They are running to win, right?
Duh.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. You're very positive then?
I'm very positive that they're going to win.
Yeah.
I don't know. But see, the thing is, the more time we spend being sidelined by internecine fighting between the Democrats, the less time we spend focused on things that matter much more.
Okay, what would you think would be the thing we should focus on today?
Perhaps the President of the United States and his impeachment trial, which begins today.
Well, but
that seems like a big deal to me.
You think an impeachment trial that goes for, 2 days?
We'll see.
From 1 o'clock in the afternoon till 1 o'clock in the morning? You think people are actually going to tune into that?
I didn't say it wasn't a stupid impeachment trial.
Ah, fair enough.
It's an impeachment trial. It's going enough. To be something that's going to be called an impeachment trial.
Well, I would agree with that. Something called or very like an impeachment trial.
Yes.
Okay, so we agree. And with that, I'll turn it all over to you because you're serious about this.
No. Please continue.
Well, look.
Let's talk about Davos.
No, I don't want to talk about Davos because, you know, that's where the rich people gathered to say that they're all doing good.
Ah, right.
And Trump doesn't fit in that crowd because he doesn't have any knowledge at all.
Yeah.
So he has bluster and everybody laughs at him.
Yeah, we just heard Greta Thunberg also.
Well, she was good. She was good.
But she made the point that, telling everybody to panic about climate change, nothing happens. So.
No, nothing happens. We're all doomed.
Yeah, we are.
That's all right.
Okay, and thus concludes today's broadcast.
And this is the end of KBOO as we've known it. It's the end of all things, even ABC, NBC, CBS. Gone.
Indeed.
Would you have that be the case?
So the impeachment trial.
Okay, let's really seriously bear down on that.
I used the adjective stupid earlier, and I'm going to stick by that.
Wait a minute, you mean the whole thing is stupid? What do you...
No, the whole thing is very serious when it gets down to it, right? This is the option of last resort prescribed by the Constitution.
Right.
When somebody behaves so far out of bounds, their behavior has to be addressed.
But we've never had a crooked mafioso as president before.
No, we had a Nixon.
Yeah, but he's just a crooked creep.
Yeah, and we had a Clinton.
Well, he's just an incompetent creep.
And a Johnson.
Well, he was a well-intentioned creep, except he didn't know how to get out of Vietnam.
No, Andrew Johnson.
Oh, Andrew Johnson.
He was impeached.
Just after the Civil War.
Yeah, just after the Civil War.
That's because he didn't want black people to have rights.
No, he was an avowed white supremacist.
Yes.
Yeah, and in...
Lincoln threw him into the ticket to unite the country.
Yes, indeed.
Big mistake.
Yeah, huge mistake. Because essentially, with Lincoln's assassination, Johnson had no interest in Reconstruction and basically gave free rein to the newly formed white supremacist vigilantes in the South, otherwise known as the Klan, to run wild.
Yes, yeah. And they did.
They did. Interestingly enough, the Republicans this time around have been complaining about how the Democrats have rushed through the impeachment process.
Yes.
The impeachment of Andrew Johnson took 2 days, and there was a vote even before the articles of impeachment had been drafted. They were sent over to the Senate after the fact.
Huh.
Yeah. That was interesting.
Well, you know, this is all of this is pushing toward the fact that at the founding of the country, and I've said this before, and probably that nobody wants to hear it anymore, but still, women were excluded, people who didn't have property were excluded, persons of color were excluded, Native Americans were to be slaughtered and gotten rid of. Really, a republic, but not really a progressive one from the get-go.
Yeah.
A lot of good ideas, but... Still, 1780s, you know.
Indeed. Well, we've mentioned on the show many times that the central narrative of the United States is trying to live up to the ideals expressed in its founding documents. And it's been a patchy record at best.
At best.
So, this impeachment trial tomorrow. We've arrived at a place where I think Nancy Pelosi's strategy to not send the articles of impeachment over right away in the final analysis turned out to be a good one.
Oh, yeah.
For a couple of reasons. First and most notably, that a bunch of new evidence has arisen in the intervening months, most particularly the statements issued by Lev Parnas.
Can we trust him?
No, he's not a reliable witness. Definitely not. But everything he said
fits
the pattern. Yeah. And yes, slots right in with the available evidence. So the facts would suggest that what he's saying is true or very close to it. And certainly would implicate the president and the vice president in what
you mean, Pence who prays?
Pence who prays, yeah. Oh. Pence might want to pray, start praying a little more.
Well, you know.
Right. So all this evidence came to light. The other benefit from Pelosi withholding the articles of impeachment for a month is that there's been plenty of time to point out that what Mitch McConnell had been planning to do, which might have even been simply a vote to acquit, before there was even a trial or presentation of evidence.
This is Alice in Wonderland, by
right,
the way.
Simply a vote to acquit and dismiss all charges. That mm-hmm. was what he was leaning toward in the beginning.
Right.
So in this intervening month, there's been plenty of time to throw light upon this to the point that he's not going to be able to go forward with that. And today, as a matter of fact, starting right after this broadcast, this is day one of the impeachment trial.
Yeah.
They're going to spend, I'm guessing, probably the whole day hashing out how the rules of evidence and witnesses are going to work.
Right. And the McConnell plan essentially is to make it a farce.
Yeah, precisely.
And to make it last into the early hours of the morning so that ordinary folk who have to work for a living won't be able to listen.
No. And if you're looking to tune into something like a congressional hearing, this is not what you're going to see. They've very limited choices for media in the room.
Right.
There's going to be one fixed camera.
Fixed camera. I understand, people, what that means. That means that over in the corner, what's really the thing is not going to be seen.
Yeah, so you got to wonder then what that camera is going to be fixed on, because there may or may not be witnesses for the camera to be fixed on.
That's right.
Is it just going to shine on the beautiful faces of the House impeachment managers? I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. That's one of the things they're going to hash out today. The other thing to consider is, in an impeachment trial, let me back up a step here.
Sure.
One more comment on Mitch McConnell. His public comments of a few weeks ago, where he said that his office has been working very closely with the White House in preparation for the trial.
Right.
He indicated on camera that he was planning to have the Senate acquit the president.
Right.
Let's just consider this in a different context for a second. This is where the members of a jury have announced that they are colluding with the defendant to affect the outcome of a trial.
Before the trial.
Before the trial.
Yeah.
I don't think by anybody's measure that is anything approaching fair. No.
You just, no, well, you
no.
know.
Not at all.
Of course it's not fair.
Well, I mean, that's what you hope for, right? Right? You hope for fair.
Hope for, I pray, it's yeah. given my religious beliefs, it's pretty far away. I pray for fairness.
Well, in an attempt to ensure fairness in this process, the founders decided that the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court would be the presiding officer of any Senate trial.
Well, given the limits of that document, yes, it makes sense.
Yeah, indeed it does. However, as you mentioned, the limits of that document, the impeachment procedure is not very well enumerated in the Constitution.
No, even though they were, and you can read it, you can read this in the various papers published at the time, even though they were terribly afraid of a powerful president.
Yeah, indeed they were. So they provided this mechanism, impeachment, to deal with a president who gets out of bounds, as we've mentioned earlier, but they didn't delineate exactly what was supposed to happen. They said that there'd be a trial in the Senate, where the senators act as the jury, and the House members of the House act as prosecutors. The president is able to, or the defendant, the president in this case, is able to, if he wants to, I suppose, appear in person, but he's not going to do that. His attorneys are going to appear on his behalf.
A lot of really creepy attorneys.
Yeah. Welcome back, Ken Starr, everybody.
Yay!
Ken Starr, author of The Starr Report and serial leaker of prurient information.
Right.
Everybody remembers him, I'm sure.
Nah.
Alan Dershowitz.
I love Dershowitz. He
Do
is
you?
The most. He's the most irrelevant, arrogant constitutional lawyer ever.
Well, for all his irrelevance and arrogance, here he is in an impeachment trial.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be a circus. And so you wonder then, given that...
A fast circus.
A one-ring circus.
Right.
Right. Given that the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court presides, you might ask, well, what does that role entail? According to McConnell this time around, it's going to entail as little as possible. You could imagine a scenario in which the presiding judge in this situation might be an activist. He might, for example, look at the rules adopted by the Senate for the trial and say, this is no good. Try again. But I really doubt that that's going to happen this time.
Well, I don't know, but I think you're right.
Yeah. The problem is, as I mentioned before, we don't have much instruction from the Constitution, and we don't have much precedent. This is only the third time this has ever happened. The last time around, the Clinton impeachment.
Well, that was a farce.
It was a farce, yes, but the rules adopted by, in a 100-0 vote in the Senate for how that trial would play out were pretty good.
Yeah.
Witnesses could be called, testimony could be heard. It was a transparent process, at least insofar as that process could be transparent.
Right.
And really a great deal better than what we're having now, or what we expect to have now. McConnell's already indicated that he's going to reject that. It's already been brought up. Hey, let's use the same rules we did last time.
Well, he said he wanted to.
McConnell said he wanted to?
Yeah, he said it will be like that. It should be like that.
Yeah, but he's also saying one thing and doing another, because he also said he wants to just have a vote to dismiss.
Right.
Which is nothing like the last time.
That's true.
So I imagine after a lot of blustering today, there'll probably be very minor concessions made by the Republicans, and then we will proceed with what will essentially be a show trial.
A show trial just the opposite of the old Soviet-style show trials.
How's it the opposite?
Well, it'll be lots of no evidence of guilt allowed, and lots of evidence of, like that. Remember, that's the Republican mantra.
Oh, okay. So you said it's the opposite of an old Soviet show trial.
Right.
It sounds like we're going to have exactly the same.
It'll be the same in the sense that it won't be fair, and it'll be the same in the sense that there won't be any effort to find the truth. That'll all be the same. But this is an effort to find someone innocent, whereas in the Soviet system, it was a foregone conclusion that everyone would be found guilty.
Yeah. I want to remind people here in the push and pull of this that there was new evidence and new witnesses admitted in the impeachment trial of Bill Clinton.
That's a good point.
Yeah, between the time that the articles of impeachment were presented to the Senate and the time that the trial took place.
Now, this is all about Clinton lying about the fact of the stained dress.
Precisely. Yeah. Yeah. What I'm talking about exactly is that in that intervening period of time, three video depositions were taken by three different witnesses, which were then played during the trial for the senators to hear.
Uh-huh.
So this contention that the Republicans are making that, we have to proceed forward with only the evidence collected by the House of Representatives.
Right.
Well, clearly that's silly, because past precedent shows, you can admit new evidence.
Yeah, and not only can you admit, it's all very unclear, of course, in the Constitution, but you can admit lots of evidence. And you obviously also can actually introduce what's already been said, but they won't. McConnell isn't going to allow that, as far as I can tell. So everything will be a fight. Everything will be a struggle, right. And it all has to take place in a very short period of time.
Yeah. So McConnell's proposing that at first things will unfold like they did in 1999. There'll be opening statements. Then there'll be some questions from senators. Then it's going to meet up now and vote on whether they're going to call new witnesses or new evidence.
Right.
And McConnell's arguing this will speed things up.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you took away all the traffic signals and you allowed every car go 150 miles an hour, speed things up.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, this is... it's going to be silly. It's going to be embarrassing, and it's going to be something far less, I think, than our republic deserves, and I would imagine far less than the framers intended. Although, invoking what the framers may or may not have intended is kind of a silly exercise.
That's kind of true, because they're dead.
Yep.
Long time ago.
Yep. And they never intended for women to vote, right, or for black people to vote,
or people without property.
Or people without property.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, or they never intended people to vote for their senators either.
No, that changed, what, in 1900?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Should we go to the phones?
Yeah, let's do that.
John, good morning.
Good morning. Doesn't it seem like the Republicans, let's say, use Brave New World and maybe 1984 both as their playbooks?
That doesn't seem too far-fetched, does it?
That's a very literary analysis.
When I kind of... lost hope was about 20 years ago when I heard this guy listening to Fox News in his yard while he was doing some gardening. I said, "Oh, you like Fox?" He said, "Yeah, I like Fox."
Well, he needed a little more manure, apparently.
Because I like Fox because they're fair and balanced. And I just rolled my eyes and walked away. And it's never stopped bothering me that we didn't have to brainwash. We didn't have to work at brainwashing the people. They were completely compliant, not all the people, but enough
of the people, right.
Yeah. All right, that's all I wanted to say.
Hi, thank you for the call. You too.
Well, I agree with him. What can I say?
going back to the only precedent we really have in the modern era, when the Clinton trial opened, the Senate then admitted into evidence the evidence presented by the House as part of the Articles of Impeachment. They said, okay, here's some evidence.
Yeah.
That may not happen this time. It's, as McConnell's indicated, that depending on how the deliberations go today, they may go forward with a trial in which
there's no evidence.
No evidence is admitted.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. I mean, it's on its face. It's
the Alice in Wonderland yep. trial.
On one level, you kind of
verdict first, evidence after.
You got to admire the audacity. Wow.
There's a Yiddish word for that.
Chutzpah?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Great word. Love that word.
Well, it's in the American lexicon now.
Yeah, it is. Indeed. But really not too far out of the realm of possibility, considering who we're talking about. This is the guy with the chutzpah.
The turtle.
Yeah, the turtle.
Yeah.
To steal a Supreme Court nomination from a president.
Oh, he did that a lot.
Yeah. I had an argument over the holidays with an old family friend. And she thought that all of this was great. Right, that all this was happening because it's going to refocus people on the Constitution, and it's going to bring about this rebirth of interest in and loyalty to the Constitution. And she thought that at the end of the day, Mitch McConnell was a true American. He was going to look deep down and do the right thing and make sure that the Senate trial was fair.
Turtles go on shore, lay eggs, and go back to the sea. That's what they do.
I really admire and love this old family friend, and I really hope that this does bring about a rebirth and interest in the Constitution, but McConnell ain't going to run a fair trial. It's just not going to happen.
This guy is so... I mean, there are very few public figures who I make fun of easily and characterize them as...
Really? Very few?
Well, a few. But amphibian, this is the turtle.
Yeah, it's not an amphibian, it's a reptile.
Thank you. Okay, thank you for that correction. I needed that.
I know you did.
It made me feel real secure.
Excuse me. Let's go back to the phones.
Yeah.
George, good
George,
morning.
George, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. And this is so important. I almost hesitated to interrupt it with something a little different, but I heard about three or four anti-Soviet Union remarks, and I've been reading a book which says that we have been sold a propaganda version of the Soviet Union for the last 70 years.
Well, sure.
And it's not true, the author says. He says, I have researched this, and most of what we've been told is distortion or outright lies, and I suggest that the book that he wrote to show this, called Blood Lies, his name is Grover Furr, a professor of history in, I think, New Jersey, is good reading. And in the meantime, let's get back to Donald Trump, but please, before you indulge in kicking the Soviet Union every time, I would hope one or both of you read this book, The Soviet Union Confronted and Destroyed the Nazi Beast.
That's true.
It is true.
That is true. The Soviet Union was the great winner of World War II.
And also in the 20s and 30s, the Soviet Union was constantly threatened with invasion and conspiracy to commit later invasion. So I just think this is important, and it's in that book, Blood Lies by Grover Furr. I would suggest
I would dismiss this, but I have a real question for you. Do you think Stalin was a little small d Democrat?
First of all, the Soviet Union was in a virtual state of war from 1917 on, even though by 1922.
Well, I understand that, but I'm asking a fundamental question here about the leadership.
And what I'm saying about Stalin is that Grover Furr argues that Stalin was a very thoughtful, caring person in terms of war. He was unable to do much of what we do under a democratic era because the Soviet Union was basically facing military invasion from 1917 on, right through World War II. Stalin was a military leader, but Grover Furr says he was indeed not the evil dictator we've heard. But it's in the book. I don't know if Furr is right, but we need to have some kind of a debate about this.
I'm not sure we need to have a debate on that right now.
Right now.
But let me, I can't let this go. Now listen, this is important. There are many interesting aspects to the attempt to create socialism in the Soviet Union. But the proof of the failure of that system rests in the current Russia. Period. We did. Let me finish.
You know that the current Russia decided capitalism was great a few years ago and tried to go down that road for a few years, and the population was revolted. In the meantime, they had said, we give up on the experiment of the Soviet Union. So I think I should get off the air here. We've got an impeachment trial coming up.
Yeah, we're not talking about Russia today.
Yeah, but I would say, please look at and read the book Blood Lies by Grover Fur, and then you may say, oh, I didn't know. Okay.
Hey, thanks. All right, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
It is.
90.7 FM on your dial, KBOO. We're taking your phone calls, 503-231-8187. Also, your written commentary at our Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe.
And what we're really going to try to zero in on, because it is the moment of truth here, is the impeachment trial.
Indeed.
Not the impeachment. He's already impeached. Let's be clear. It's the trial of the president consequent to the impeachment.
Indeed. And we're also taking tweets at HonestAbe72.
We are.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So how do you anticipate this playing out, Joe?
How do I see this playing out?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not much of a prognosticator, but I would say that unless the Democrats can really get it together and gather some votes, I would say at least four members of the Senate who are Republicans, the whole thing's going to go as McConnell would like it. I think it's going to be a whitewash. I think it'll weaken Trump for the election, which, of course, is McConnell's greater concern. And I also think that there's real problems with the way the Democratic Party has structured its contest to name candidates for the office of president and vice president. So there's a lot of bad juju in all of this, and I have I personally have no great hope for it. That's what I say.
Yeah, I don't have any great hope for it either.
Well, we should probably get off the air and get somebody who's positive in here.
Well, let me just say this first. I don't have any great hope for it either. There's been some talk around the margins that enough senators will be peeled off to remove him from office, but that ain't going to happen.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't even concede that. I actually don't know what's going to happen.
All right. Well, I'll make a prediction then.
Okay.
I think the Senate's going to acquit the president.
How quick?
How quickly?
Yeah.
Today? We'll know by the end of the trial.
Okay.
Now, they're going to acquit the president. The question I have is, will the Democrats be smart enough to capitalize on this and what it means for the Republic? And my prediction there is no. Never underestimate the Democrats' ability to screw something up.
Well, they're already in fights. The two progressives, so-called, Bernie and Elizabeth, are in fighting mode with each other. Apparently, Bernie's camp has trotted out some bad stuff about Biden, which is real bad stuff about Biden. And they're about to shred each other long before they come against the evil Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cheering up.
It's just happy.
It's fun.
Happy
what
times,
fun. Yeah. Let's go to the phone. Somebody will say something nice. 231-8187. Christopher, you're on the air.
I don't have something nice to say. Fortunately, it's about Mitch McConnell. I've been studying totalitarian states for about 30 years, and I noticed a picture of Mitch McConnell smirking, and there was an uncanny resemblance to Hermann Göring.
Oh, no. Let's not go there.
Well, why not?
Because I don't think he's a Nazi. Comment. Let's start with that.
No. I said a resemblance.
Okay.
I didn't say he was a Nazi.
No, you didn't exactly say that.
But
okay, we're gonna let that go. I actually think it's very dangerous to draw upon old historical bad things to make an equivalence with these people. These people are not Nazis. They may behave in a fascist way, but the difference between Nazism and fascism is very real, and it's, I don't want to spend time on a damn lecture about it, but it's really a difference. And I think it's important to know that there's a difference and to look at this, because I do believe this is fascism. It's important to see the difference and see what is and what is not Nazi-like in the behavior of the Republicans this particular group of Republicans. That's all I want to say about that. But we should go back to the phones. 231-8187. Mike, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning, Joe, Abe. How are you guys?
Oh, you know.
All right. First off, we will do the Constitution. The American public will. They'll study it real hard. But you know what?
What?
Too late.
No, man. It's never too late.
I hope you're right. Number two, this guy talking about Stalin, he kept repeating himself. He reminded me of my wife because he keeps repeating himself and he doesn't listen.
So wait. You're attacking your wife for being like a guy who talked on the radio?
Yeah.
I don't want to go there because there's just so many layers of bad.
My son does that to me, too. He says, Dad, I don't like where this conversation's going.
Well, I don't like where this conversation is going. I really don't. I mean, I think it's irrelevant. I have no idea about your family relations. I don't like the feel of it. All right. What's going on to me?
I don't know, man.
Where are the weird. Brilliant minds of yesteryear? That's a paraphrase of a poem.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Où sont les nuages d'antan?
Oh.
Where are the snows of yesterday?
That's so melancholy.
It's so melancholy.
I just feel the ennui.
Oh, yeah, the ennui has got you by the you-know-what.
That's right. Coming up today on KBOO, at 8 on the, that's us, at 9 on Local Politics.
Whoa. Is that about us?
Yeah, hey.
Oh, okay.
We almost opened a rift in space-time there. All right. At 9 on Local Politics, KBOO News Director Althea Billings presents a Rose City Retrospective. At 10 on Total.
Wait a minute, Rose City Retrospective?
That's right.
That rhymes and all that.
Yeah, local politics.
It's very alliterative, but what does it mean?
Well, you'll have to tune in and find out.
I guess.
At 10 on Totality of Circumstance, we review the police-community relations over the past 3 years. At 11 on stage at Studio, Demir Roberts features the Fertile Ground Citywide Festival of New Works with actress, director, and writer S. Renee Mitchell. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews John Weber about his new job as executive director of the Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art at the University of Oregon in Eugene. All this and more coming up today on KBOO.
Boy.
And remember, you don't have to tune in live to hear all these things.
You don't?
No.
Oh, how do you do that?
They're available as podcasts on iTunes and on Google Play.
Oh.
And you can also download the KBOO mobile app today and stream KBOO programming over your phone.
What fun.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So modern, up to date, well, sort of.
Yeah, sort of.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Okay, look, what we're talking about, if you're just tuning in, and what we can't escape talking about is the starting today impeachment, not the impeachment, but the trial of the president who's already been impeached, let's be clear.
Yep.
And what's going to be done and how will it be fair or unfair given that the turtle is in charge?
All right. Here's what the White House said. This is in a statement. Quote, we are gratified that the draft resolution... this is McConnell's draft of the rules.
Ah, yes.
We're gratified that the draft resolution protects the president's rights to a fair trial and look forward to presenting a vigorous defense on the facts and the process as quickly as possible and seeking an acquittal as swiftly as possible. So fair trial means one that's rigged in the president's favor.
Ken Starr.
That's a fair trial. Can you believe that? This weekend, I just look to the heavens. It's just beggar's belief. How does that guy... end up as a defending attorney in an impeachment trial?
Because he does what he's expected to do, if not told to do.
Oh, I see.
And he's a useful tool.
Oh, I see. So he's already proved his qualifications.
Yeah,
in that regard.
He hounded the Clintons unmercifully from Arkansas on.
Yeah,
and
he did.
He didn't in the end. Didn't get nothing.
Yeah, that's true. And he kept expanding the scope of his investigation. Remember that? Remember the revelations uncovered in the Paula Jones sexual harassment suit?
Oh, right.
He just decided that we're going to scoop those up in his line of inquiry as well. And, of course, that's how we got to Monica Lewinsky.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
None of this, of course, is to excuse Bill Clinton or his behavior.
Well, irrelevant. Long time ago.
Well, I disagree, but we won't go there.
Okay, we're not going to go there. We're going to talk about what used to happen, which was no longer happenable.
Let's
go to the phone.
Susie, good morning.
231-8187. Susie, you're on the air. Pardon me.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, hi. Okay, I really don't want to rehash what's been going on and still going on. I want to hear solutions. I want to hear, you know, that we have a corrupt Department of Justice. What do we do about that? When will being out in the street really make a difference? So I wish you'd have a whole show on solutions. What do we do next?
Well, I would like to hear that too, and I do appreciate your criticism, implied though it is. Let me be clear about a couple of things. We tend, particularly on the progressive, liberal, left, whatever you want to call it, half of the politics of America, we tend to act spontaneously or nearly spontaneously, even when we organize, and that's ironic but true. And we have big marches, you know, we had the huge women's march and all these things. They don't really matter if you don't have a systemic way of opposing the fascist menace. And we have not, as a society, come to grips with that fascist menace, because it goes to the very heart of a system that since the Cold War has been in place. So it's very hard to do more than just react. That's what I think. But I'm not saying we shouldn't demonstrate. I think that's absolutely the most necessary of the things we have to hand. But
I'm not saying that's the only thing. It's just that if you go on and listen to, you know, all these different programs, everybody is going over and over and over what the Trump administration is doing, what Trump is doing. I mean, it just gets so tiring.
Well, should we forget it and not talk about it?
No, I think we need to see what recourse do we have with a corrupt Justice Department. I mean, sometimes I go on and listen to Ari Melber, for example.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And he usually has people who really know what they're talking about. You know, and they're not predicting anything. They're just saying, this is what's legal, this is what isn't legal, this is what can be done, this is where this is going. I just want to hear something more, you know, not, I don't know, wringing our hands about, you know.
So I'm not clear what you're saying. Are you saying that we, that is we of the media, and that's a lot of different things, are somehow not dealing with the situation we're in? Because I don't think that's fair or true by any means, though there is reason to criticize.
Well, I think the media hasn't really done its job.
It never did its job. There is no time in American history when the media per se was accurate and careful and reasonable and well argued. It sometimes is, but mostly it isn't. It's sensational. It has to sell its papers or its TV shows or whatever. This is an inherent weakness of a free press.
Well, I'm just saying it's very frustrating. I'm turning off NPR more and more. I'm just trying to find people who have really something to say, like Lawrence Tribe, for example.
Well, he's a good example of someone who does have something to say.
Yes, and all I'm saying is I want to hear more solutions rather than rehashing.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think, this is a philosophical question, I guess, do you think there is, within the context of the existing system, a solution?
I think there has to be.
What do you mean has to be?
There has to be. Well, we can't, I mean, it just feels like democracy, our democracy, and maybe democracies all around the globe at this point, are just falling apart. So what do we do? I mean, that's just my question. What do we do? And I just like to hear what people have to say about what the next step is. Because, you know, if you listen to Democracy Now!, the system is rigged. So the impeachment trial is rigged. So my question is, what do we do?
That is a very good question. I really appreciate your call. That is a very big question.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Well, this edges toward the Catholic sin of despair.
No, I think she's asking for hope. She's saying everywhere voices are telling her to despair. But she's saying, what do we do? What gives us hope?
Okay, you're on.
So I'd say, number one, organize, organize, organize.
I agree.
And, you know, not just in terms of, you know, backing somebody for the presidential campaign.
Or marching one day sometime.
Or marching one day, yeah. We've talked a lot on this program about, you know, wrung our hands about the absence of a viable third-party voice in American politics. And the conclusion we inevitably come to is, yes, that would be a great thing, but that's something that has to arise organically at the local level.
Well,
and that means those of you out there wondering what to do, the answer is run for office. Support somebody in your community, a progressive who's running for office, for city council, for county commission, for the soil and water board, you know, for the metro commission, for whatever. Organize, and put pressure on those people who hold office and represent you at the local level. And that's how we begin to build this apparatus.
Well, I agree with you, but I think that it's extremely dangerous when you mention the idea of third parties. Look what happened with the so-called Green Party during the last election for president. Turned out to be a tool of the Russian oligarchs. It did. Everyone's in denial sometimes about that, but it did.
I have to confess, I don't know enough to comment one way or another.
There is no history except the last time a third party ascended was with the collapse of the Whigs in 1856. And then that led to 1860 and President Lincoln and so on. But that's the last time where it really, really was the case that the party structure remade itself.
Okay. Well, then let me add this caveat.
Okay.
To my first pillar.
Your pillar?
Organize.
I agree with that. I want to be clear. I agree. Organizing is a prerequisite to change.
And I just talked about third-party voices. Well, you know, that's not strictly necessary. If there's an existing party that people are able to remake in a more progressive mold, then that's fine. But that, again, requires organization.
Yes, right? It does. It also requires money.
Right. But you can, you know, there are more and better ways to raise money now for political applications than there have ever been. And more and better ways for you to spend your money than there's ever been, right? You can support progressive candidates in districts far from your home now.
That's true.
Yeah. It's, you know, you can, in that respect, really vote for with your dollars, which brings me to pillar number two. Vote with your dollars, not just in terms of whom you support for public office or the policies that you support for public office, but in terms of the consumer products and services that you purchase with your dollars.
And, of course, the organizations that fight for the environment, et cetera,
indeed.
Okay.
Yeah, you can choose to eat things, for example, that were grown locally and organically. You can choose to invest if you're somebody who must drive a car and you're able and you have the means. Again, yeah, having the means is very important here. You know, to get a zero emission vehicle, you can do that. You can choose to not drive a vehicle at all if you're able. All these choices that you make with the money you spend and the habits you live each and every day of your life, you know, collectively amongst millions of people, can nudge things in the right direction.
Well, to quote a famous female author of recent note, "No is not enough."
Right, no is not enough.
Okay, hey, we got a lot of people.
No, I'm not done with my pillars.
Okay, finish your pillars.
And the third pillar, pressure. We have people in office right now, right? Maybe they're not the people we want. Maybe they're from parties who aren't as progressive as we want them to be. But nevertheless, they do hear and respond to public pressure. You can write to and call these people all the time, and it's an easy thing to do. You can Google the Capitol switchboard. Call them up and they'll connect you with any office of any lawmaker that you want.
And you get to talk to some poor, hardworking, probably woman who takes calls.
Yeah, that's right. So all three of those things taken together can give you a more hopeful outlook on life. And if adopted by enough people, can actually result in some measurable change.
Well, this has been a long-term difference between you and I, since I think it's improbable that public pressure of the kind you're describing will, in the end, make that much difference in the current political structure.
Consider this. Who, in the last quarter, raised the most money amongst the Democratic presidential candidates?
I don't know.
Bernie Sanders.
Yes, that's true.
By a considerable margin.
Yes.
All of it from small individual donors.
And look what difference it made.
Well, I don't know. He's doing better now, if the polls are to be believed.
Okay.
To be believed. But the point is, the model exists to completely bypass the big money sources of political funding. It's there. We have the apparatus to do it. Bernie is proving that it works. that he can raise significant sums of money.
That's true. And I will acknowledge that. But I think at this point we need to go to the phones if you're done with your pillars.
I am done with my pillars.
Only three pillars?
Only three pillars.
Okay. Let's go to the phones. 231-8187. Brian, you're on the air.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
So that's a lot of stuff happened while I waited on.
Sorry.
But thank you, Abe, for what you said about in answer to the woman before. That's what I was responding to. She said, what can we do? And she seemed to be coming from that point of view of a lot of people. It's like, what can I watch? What can I listen to? What blog can I, you know, participate in that will give me the information that I want? And for what? I mean, you got to do something. That, and I just wanted to recommend something that I heard on it. I was driving home the other day and heard a show called On the Media, which can oftentimes have some great stuff on it. And it had the middle section of that show was with a gentleman that was talking about this concept of getting so over-informationalized and not doing any actual, you know, work on the ground. And it was a great discussion about that, of basically answering that woman's questions, like, what can we do? Well, you know, get off your tush, quit watching and listening, and do something. Make calls, do get involved in your party politics, but from the local, you know, and start local and then expand. But it was a good reminder of some basics that we should all know, but we get caught up in this media frenzy.
Okay, I think that's positive. I think also that we should remind each other that all politics is, in essence, local. And therefore, what you're saying is not wrong at all and is hopeful. But let's go to some other folks right now. 231-8187. Arthur, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, Congress has already shown its colors. I mean, they didn't restrict the arms sales to Saudi Arabia. They gave the military a huge budget. And they failed to reunite the thousands of children in Oklahoma in jail with their parents.
You're talking about people from south of the border there, I think.
Yeah, the immigrant children, there are thousands of them.
Yeah, not just in Oklahoma.
Away from the parent in Oklahoma and Fort Silla and other places run privately for profit.
Yes, and it's just a reprehensible scene.
Right, so let me get back to, that's the complaint part of my call. The solutions part is this. How about that women's march? You know, those thousands of women that are supposedly marching somewhere?
Yeah.
Why don't they just march to Fort Sill and bust those kids out? Because Congress is not going to do it. And in the process, I'm sure somebody will be hurt, but Congress is not going to do that. I think the women's march should go right for Fort Sill.
Are you going to join them?
Hell yeah! If I have time, I'll do it. But that's a solution. I'm going to hang up. But that's my way of a solution.
So you want to let me be clear here. You want to have a civil rebellion against the dishonorable law enforcement system, and you think that that will create something other than simply cracking down on that rebellion.
Well, it seems like the lack of action is slowly leading to a fascist-type environment.
Well, I think you're raising the dilemma. I'm not sure that there's a solution there.
Well, that's my proposition. Whether it's feasible or not, I'll leave up to you and other callers to debate.
I appreciate the call. I don't mean to diss you. I'm saying we have a lot of problems here. I don't know that we have a strategy that would actually do something good.
Hmm. Well, he was with the Standing Rock, the Keystone Pipeline. That tactic worked.
It did well for a while.
Yeah,
for a while.
Yeah. Well, but in this case, it would only need to work long enough to get those kids reunited with their families. Enough of a crowd there with enough media attention.
I don't like to say go up against the armed armies of the Republic.
Well, even in a peaceful demonstration?
There's no such thing as a peaceful demonstration when you're in the thousands and somebody else has guns.
Okay.
I mean, I really do fear a killing and then a cover-up.
That's indeed. Well, you know, you're right. You're right, Joe. I'm really glad that during the Vietnam War, nobody bothered to go out there and march in the thousands.
Well, they went out there and marched in the thousands, and that wasn't what ended the Vietnam War. What ended the Vietnam War is the tactical impossibility of that war.
Yes, but public pressure was a big factor.
It was a factor.
Yeah,
and it brought the Republicans to power in the form of Richard Nixon.
If we're serious about this situation, then direct action in the streets is one of the tools available to
us. Oh, absolutely.
One of the most effective tools.
I'm not going to put it down. I was very much involved in that.
I know you were. But you know, there's an inherent risk in that. And I think if you're serious about it, you have to accept that inherent risk. You know, I showed up to this demonstration, you know, I might get tear gassed or something.
Well, that's the mildest thing that might happen.
That's the mildest thing that might happen. Yes.
Certainly it would involve tear gas. Okay, we got a lot of people calling us.
We got a message on the Facebook page from Mark, who writes in to say, Pelosi's delay seems to also disadvantage the candidates that the Democratic machine would rather lose the nomination. The timing seems way worse for Sanders and Warren than for the president, who will have a long time to brag about being totally exonerated. The articles are too few, the trial was too fast, and then the progressives will be laid off the line in the Iowa caucus.
Well, I think those fears are real.
Well, I think they are too. But I think if you're a smart political candidate, you know, and you're a senator and you're being called off the campaign trail to do this, then you make a big deal of you showing up to do your constitutional duty.
Yeah.
But you talk a lot about how that's more important than your political campaign.
But the turtle has rigged it so that nobody can fly home and not have a serious exhaustion problem.
Well, that's fine. But then say you're Elizabeth Warren. So every day after the impeachment trial is over, you go to your office where you've got a camera and a microphone set up, and you do a brief address, and then you tweet it out and you push it out over social media so that millions of people can see it. Mm-hmm. And you talk about, A, what happened in the impeachment trial and why you think it was garbage, and B, about how important it is that you're here doing your job as a U.S. senator the way the Constitution demands, and 3, C, this shows that I'm on the right side of history and of justice, and this is why I'm the best person to defeat Donald Trump.
Well, it sounds okay, but it doesn't sound adequate to me.
No, it's not ideal, but there's a way you can make the most of it, I think.
Okay, I think we should go to the phones some more.
Let's do it.
All right. 2318187. Is that Oliver?
It is. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
All right.
Well, how are you, sir?
Not too bad. Now, I don't want to get reactionary. You know, I've been calling into you guys for a couple of years. I don't want to get into I told you so. Russiagate was a complete hoax, and I did make those calls. But I got to address Joe, and I've done this on your Facebook page. It's very offensive, Joe, when you attack and make derogatory comments about the Green Party. We take this very personally. We don't appreciate that. I want to say one quick thing about what happened in 2016. We weren't under the influence and control of Russians. What actually happened, and this is something that I was objected to, but it was out of my hands at that point. Once we nominate a presidential candidate, that team pretty much takes control. Now, there is problems with partisan politics, but let me say this. They, the inside working crew around Dr. Jill, and it's come out that Dr. Jill was not a fan of this. We had Democrat attorneys that came from the Clinton campaign, associates of Clinton, that proposed and offered help and assistance with the media to target 3 states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, in the recount. And so Dr. Jill's team, along with Cobb, which I don't get me started on David Cobb, but he was the campaign manager at that point handling the recount, they spun this for the Democrats. In effect, these insiders carried water for the Democrat Party, not the Russians. So, Joe, please don't do that, okay?
Well, wait a minute. I'm not gonna take being spanked quietly here. The fact of the matter is, whatever well-intentioned people like yourself are, you were used by the Russians.
Listen, that is silly. Come on now. But let me say, I agree
not
with
silly.
Steve.
It's real.
Oh.
No, it is real.
Sir, have you read the Inspector General Horowitz report?
No.
Sir, please turn off Rachel Maddow. Please turn that off. and take a look at the PDF file of General IG Horowitz's report. It lays it out clear as all day that Carter Page was a CIA operative. They don't use the word CIA, they use the word intelligence operative. And he was embedded into it. They used the
What's that got to do with the Green Party? You may be right. I can't believe.
Because this is the corruption. It's not with Russia, sir. It has nothing to do with Russian operatives. This has to do with our own USA patriotic intelligence community that was working on behalf of the Clinton campaign. That's what the Steele dossier, that's what all of this is.
Okay, I think that you're making an argument that becomes a very complicated thing, and I'm sorry, probably my fault that I brought up the Green Party. I don't really actually care about this personally. It's over, it's done, and I don't see any Green Party on the horizon, whatever you or I might think. Anyway, I wanna thank you for the criticism, and let's just let it go for the time being.
All right. Let's go back to the phones.
Because I don't know what to do with it.
Okay. I don't know enough. I don't know enough to jump into this. It sounds like I should learn more. Let's go to Pear.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, as the woman was asking, what do we do? And I will take that in a collective sense.
Yeah.
I don't think America can do anything worthwhile unless we cut the military budget. When we spend
amen to that.
When we spend up to $1 trillion a year on preparing for war, nothing else worthwhile gets done. It sucks up all the money, sucks up the energy. Basically, right now, we have two parties of warmongers in Washington. We have the Trump, and he wants to go to war with Iran. The Democrats want to go to war with Russia. I think they are both corrupt, and they're leading the country into ruin. So
yeah, it's funny how we're willing to break the bank to go to war or to give rich people a tax cut, but every time we try to talk about doing something to improve the lives of people, all of a sudden we're counting beans again.
That's right. That's right. Yes.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The United States military budget is obscene by any objective measure. We spend far more than we need to.
It was passed by a bipartisan vote.
Oh, I know.
Well, no patriot would ever vote against a weapon system.
Well, our two senators did vote against it. I'll give them credit for that. Wyden and Merkley both voted against it.
Yeah, these are good men. They are really quite good senators, and we should be supporting them.
Right, but they are too rare in Congress. Anyway, thank you.
Hey, thanks for the call, Pear.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Azure. Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, hello.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. I was just responding to the lady that was like, what should we do?
Uh-huh.
Now, I have this idea. I'm not an app developer myself, but everybody probably is familiar with fantasy football. And I was curious if some of the app developers out there could make us a fantasy politician.
Well, I love it.
I actually think it's a good idea. I don't know if such a thing exists because I just don't hang out on the web. But it's a great idea.
Yeah, so my thought is that it would score everybody and that it would supply the emails so you could easily just be like, email my senator. It gives you the happenings and up-to-date.
Well, what you're suggesting is a more aware, more clever internet site.
Yeah, a tool that helps people organize. We have tools for all sorts of different things.
No, I'm not sure if such a thing doesn't already exist, but I think it's a very good idea.
All right. Well, I just wanted to shout out to anybody that might be listening that has the ability to develop something like that if it does not exist already.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I love it.
Thank you.
Fantasy politics team.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah,
that sounds like fun.
Hey, thank you for the call.
Except.
Yeah, you bet.
Okay, thanks for the call, man.
Hey, I got AOC on my team, man. We're going to kick some butt this year.
Well, you and I got into an argument about her, but I think she's great.
Well, I think she's great, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, I think there's a lot, I want to be clear about this. I think there's a lot of, for the first time in a long time, a lot of clearly progressive people in Congress. And I think that is an important and hopeful sign. So I'm not in despair about Congress per se. What I am frightened about is the onrushing willingness of a lot of people to accept the lying filth of the Donald Trump world. And that really disturbs me, because I think people are smarter than that, or should be.
Yeah, they're apparently not, though. I see it on Facebook all the time.
I think it has a lot to do with the sense that a lot of suddenly privileged white people are finding themselves in the minority.
Indeed.
And I think that's a real source of the insane paranoia of the Second Amendment crowd.
Indeed. So the impeachment trial starts today.
Yes, it does. This you should all listen to it, even though it'll be boring and not good.
Deal, yeah. McConnell's plan is outrageous.
Yes.
It's insulting, and the Democrats should fight it tooth and nail, and you should call your senators and encourage them to do so.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that people do listen to it, even though it's going to be tedious and creepy. I think it is going to be creepy.
That describes McConnell himself.
Tedious and creepy?
Yes.
Well, and slow moving, and he lays eggs in the sand? What?
Yeah, well, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't have any evidence of that.
No. Neither do I. It's just a rumor.
Well, thank you, everybody, for contributing today.
Yeah, and there'll be more. There'll be more. I promise.
All right. We'll be back at you next week.
Okay. And thanks for staying tuned. And you stay tuned to KBOO, because we'll be the information source for most of you. Flood of alcohol from the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9 o'clock. Coming up next on Local Politics, KBOO News Director Althea Billings presents a Rose City retrospective.
KBOO Community Radio is working with Beautiful Portland to collect socks and blankets for those who are sleeping outside this winter. There is a collection box in the lobby of KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, between Burnside and Ankeny. Donations are accepted Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2020 Portland Mochitsky Festival on Sunday, January 26th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Viking Pavilion in Portland. The Mochitsky Festival celebrates the New Year by sharing Japanese-American culture with the community. The festival features hands-on activities for all ages, cultural foods, vendors, and a wide variety of demonstrations and performances, including taiko drumming, Japanese dance, storytelling, mochi pounding, martial art demos, and much more. Again, that's the 2020 Portland Mochitsky Festival on Sunday, January 26th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Viking Pavilion, 930 Southwest Hall Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.